Hello and welcome to The Dive presented by Honda Season 5, Episode 24.
Rap God.
Mark is back.
No!
I'll just be in the middle. He's sad, you're happy. Okay. I'll just be,
And he did make sure to tell me that he was back to make sure I would pick him up. Unlike telling me he's not here.
You mentioned that in the last dive?
Yeah. Yeah, we did mention that. He absolutely trolled. Mm. Like I said, the funniest part was, and I don't even know if you remember this, but going into that dive, we were talking on the weekend about what we were going to do on the show, and you just never even mentioned it. You're just talking to me like normal, and they just don't show up.
I was trying to help you build a great show, all right? I told the necessary people. I told our producer. I told the people who schedule these things. I'm like, hey, yeah, you're
we're unnecessary.
Yeah, you got what do you need to know?
Oh, you know, I don't know, just the one who drives you here.
To be fair, I checked our DMs. You did ask me at like 9:10, and I responded at like 9:20. Like, no, I'm good.
I had already cut him loose at that point.
Yeah, I was slow responding.
Happy 4th of July as well, though.
Thank you.
You know, we had a good one. Yeah. You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. I was questioned yesterday. I went to a little 4th of July shindig, and I was told, are you even allowed to dress in American colors? You're Canadian.
Wait, didn't you go to Freaks?
Yeah. And so
was this Freak who asked?
Was it Freak?
Yeah, no, it was not Freak. It was kind of sarcastic. It was just funny. Yeah. But it's always nice. I will say, fireworks in America are intense. When I first moved to LA, I was actually shocked how many, like, it's not as bad where I live now, but I lived in Culver City, in the area I lived in, there was literally fireworks every day for a month leading up to 4th of July every year. And I was like, how do people have so much money for fireworks? Like, where are you getting them all?
I saw some graphs posted about causes of fires, and you can guess where this is going.
Number one, baby.
There's like
USA.
There's all these different causes that, you know, arson even included, and all these things like brush fires,
lightning strikes,
everything that California has to deal with during the summer.
Yeah.
And then there's a single graph, and they're all compared, and there's the fireworks one that's like, yeah, at the bottom, boom, and it blows out the top of the entire thing.
You have to go logarithmic to like fit it on.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
Just all these different factors, and then Billy Bob in the backyard with his fireworks.
Safety first, okay? Safety first, people.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, for the first time in 757 days, an LCS team not named TSM, TL, or C9 ends the weekend in sole possession of first. 100 Thieves sitting at the top of the table. It's pretty crazy, you know, like, I knew that it had been a while because it's always kind of come down to those three teams for years, right? And even the last team to do it was Optic, and that was for like a week or something.
That had to be like right at the start too.
It was. I think it was week two I read. You know, they were 4-0 or whatever, and they held it for a week. So it's cool to see not only is a fourth team competing, but they're actually the clear best team right now, right? And I think that is the biggest change, is that I always want those extra teams to come up and really challenge those guys at the top, because it makes playoffs so much more exciting when you have both sides of the bracket with really good matchups.
I feel like the last time I can remember a team, because to your point, I'm sure there's a bunch of times where a team grabbed it for a little bit at the start of the season with fluctuations and all that stuff, but the last time I can legitimately remember a top team being not one of these three.
Immortals?
Immortals is a good one.
Cooney Immortals.
I was going to say Gravity as well. Was that 2016 or 2015?
Gravity was like 2015, I think.
Yeah, so no, I think Immortals was more recent, because that's like the Hooney led one.
Yeah, Immortals was what, 2016, 2017, that era?
Yeah.
I think that probably would have been the last time that they were like, because they were crushing regular season, right?
They were the clear best team. Yeah.
They lost that one game to CLG, I think it was, right?
Yeah.
Darshan era. That's true. That's probably the last time that if you're thinking of like actual legit, you are the best team in the regular season, other than these three teams, was probably back to Immortals.
Yeah, I mean, makes me feel old, actually, that there's this big of a number attached to it.
757? What's that?
I'm like, whoa! Well, and technically, so that post was made last night, right? Mm-hmm. So 7:58 now, and when Dive goes live, maybe 7:59.
People live counter.
You know, people are gonna be like, it ticked over. but honestly, yeah, it's you know, the triumvirate of Jack, Steve, and Reggie has really ruled the LCS.
Shadow Council.
Yeah.
And the Cabal.
and then you got John Robinson and Nate Shot over here working away, trying to break their way in. And for them to finally do it here with some really important, I said it before, but the most impactful and farthest reaching changes between spring and summer, and to see them have these results is really heartening, because it's been so long that you don't want the other teams to, like, you know, feel like it's out of their reach and stop trying. You need stuff like this. That's why I was really excited when EG first came in.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, we're going to go after TSM. And they had these, like, attack ads. And they're straight up trying to, like, you know, burn them down and slander them and go after all these, you know, these angles to try and break into the league with an attitude. I want that passion, you know. I want the teams to care.
I think on that point, too, is that it's worth looking at, like, this didn't happen overnight. It might feel like, whoa, suddenly the best team. But it's like they got Someday like 4 years ago, and then they got the Golden Guardians core.
They've been spending money for a while.
Yeah, they've been like, it's been attempt after attempt to get there, and like little pieces you keep along the way. And so that's why I think it deserves a lot of credit, is that it's not just like, hey, lightning struck in a bottle. We happen to get the right group of people. It's like, no, it took some time to get there.
It's also interesting because it happened at a time where these teams are spending more money than ever. And that was so much of the conversation. And clearly, 100 Thieves is spending money. Don't get me wrong. You know, to bring in these guys, it's not going to be cheap. Bring in Reaper, and I'm sure he's one of the most highly paid coaches as well. But it was not one of those blockbuster deals. Like, this, for it to be happening in the split where it's like $11 million perks deal, $6 million Sword Art deal, you know, Alfari, $1.4 million a year, Jensen, $1.4 million a year, CoreJJ is over $1 million a year, Santorin, you're probably $1 million. You know, it's like all this money is getting piled up. And for them to be, you know, having now be when they're actually surging to the top, I think it's really interesting. And it does speak to what you're talking about, Mark, where it was a buildup, right? And clearly, you can't always just buy being the best team in the league right away, right? You need to kind of see what gels and what's going to work and what doesn't. And it's taken them a long time, but it's cool to see a team, you know, really challenging these guys. And now I think it's going to make TSM, TL, and C9 even more hungry to reclaim that spot.
Personally, just as an individual story, if I had to choose one for them, and it really does go along with this theme of buildup, is Hoothe and Hoothe's progression. Because you're looking at it and you're like, this guy has won LCS before, but his career was so tumultuous and he had such high highs, went to international events representing North America, but also got some of the most flame of any of the successful players that we have ever had.
Yep.
And then role swaps and makes his way back as now one of the best in support role is such a cool, long story with good history and so many different angles for me.
I mean, the last time he won, I just checked, was 2016 spring, right before that historic MSI run where they got to MSI finals, and it was that team, you know, the Aurelian Sol year. And it is crazy to think it's been that long. And yeah, I think his reputation now as a support is better than it ever was as a mid laner. He's just missing some of the accolades that he had as a mid laner, you know, some of those titles. Because back then, I agree, he was always criticized as he's a trash laner, you know, he's holding
gimmicky
down the team. He's a cheesy player, you know, he can never win like with a guy like this when there's Bjergsen and Jensen and all this sort of stuff. So it's really interesting to see the transformation that he's gone through. And CoreJJ as well, right? Like two of our greatest supports are both like role swap players, right? And I think that's kind of a cool thing to see.
Natural supports suck. That's what I got out of this.
If you choose support, then you're choosing it for the wrong
reason. You're choosing to lose.
Man, so I got to bring this stuff down. So I was watching Sword Art's stream last night, right? And he got asked, who's better, CoreJJ or Hoothe? And his answer to me was really interesting, because he was basically saying, first he was like, oh, probably CoreJJ. And he's like, wait, well, really, basically the way that you can tell who the better support is just the best support is whoever's team wins the split. And so at first that sounds like such a basic surface level answer. And his argument is that what you see when you're watching the games for support is largely unimportant. He's saying, sure, it's good if you could have engages and mechanics and this, but it's not actually the important thing for a support. The important thing for a support is that because your mechanics and stuff are less important, you have more time to be watching VODs. You have more time to be studying and helping your team prep, to be able to talk about strategy. During game, you have to watch your individual champion and do things less, so you should be the one that's actually tracking things on the map and calling out your win conditions and calling out where you should be going next on the map. And to me, that was just such an interesting perspective, like how little it seemed like he placed on the actual value of the gameplay from the support, and how highly he really valued the intangibles, the things that we can't see when we are watching. I thought was really interesting.
That is it is interesting. I mean, it, like you said, it sounds a little troll to be like, results-based analysis, the team that wins has the best support.
But when he explains it, you're kind of like, huh, I could see that maybe. Like, I can, I'm not saying I agree, but I can see his argument, right?
Yeah, because I feel like, to be the other side, you can still, like, watch laning and watch how they're playing.
Of course,
and mechanically,
you can evaluate
and all
that.
These things and all that. And so, like, I feel like, in that sense, you can say, behind, because we don't know behind the scenes, maybe a support player isn't the one making a lot of those things that he's talking about. Sometimes it's mid laners or coaches, yep, or whoever could be doing leading that kind of behind the scenes stuff. So on the outside, you often do have to trust what you see, which does not paint the whole picture, to be fair.
Except that with Core JJ, as soon as you started talking, I was like, yeah, Core JJ, it feels like he's ready to set up schools of League of Legends, and he's going to have like a university program, and he's going to have, you know, he puts so much work into infrastructure and trying to build up and get a victory for North America and all these things, you know, setting up in-houses, mm-hmm, then dominating in said in-houses, you know, climbing to the top of solo queue. He's really a guy that I feel like embraces the lead by example type of mentality, where, you know, he wants better for everybody, and then he's going to go and do it and try and get everyone to go along. So as soon as you start talking about doing stuff outside of game or even looking at a bigger picture, it's like, well,
that's number one and number two in solo queue,
by the way.
He
does a lot.
Sword Art's about 50 LP behind Core JJ now.
It really does go to show the race. And I feel like that is very important for us, because we need people to lead by example to be able to cause this shift in solo queue. That's a much bigger topic that,
yep,
that everybody's looking for. And you know, have more prestige and more honor at the top. Funnily enough, if we're going over solo queue rankings, because I think this is important, and the shift that we want to have mm-hmm, more competitive and more drive up there, the overall Team Liquid organization, and I know that this has been spurred by Core JJ, all of their players have been grinding away in solo queue, and most of them are in the top of the ladder.
Okay, it was third, Tactical's fourth, yeah. Core JJ is first.
Except I think Alfari hasn't played as many games.
Yeah, I think Alfari, I've heard, has basically played no solo queue in, yeah, a while. But it's interesting. And that is, you know, a good kind of example of what Core JJ has had as an effect on TL, right? I think it's very hard to say, nah, I don't really feel like playing those extra games when this guy who is more successful than you, who is a better individual player than you,
standing over your shoulder,
is also working harder than you, right? And it's something that people talked about with Bjergsen as well, is that he wasn't going to cut corners, is that he was going to put in the extra, mm-hmm, hours, he was going to put in the work. And when you're on his team, that made you really feel the pressure to do the same. It's like, what's my excuse if Core JJ already friggin' is a world champion and he's grinding more than me?
Yeah, I just think that it's really admirable that there's two routes to go, right? You could be like, well, we've got a problem and solo queue is not providing a lot of value right now, it's not worth it, and just to walk away and not do it. Or to be like, I'm gonna be part of the solution. I'm gonna try hard in every single one of my games. I'm gonna grind to, you know, highest LP. I'm gonna try and start that.
Yeah, change. It is the way I feel about it too, a little bit. It's like, I acknowledge the problems of solo queue for a lot of pro players, and like queue times is another thing and like all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, what's your alternative, mm-hmm, in a lot of instances? And that's why I like that the TL guys are such grinders, because back when I was coaching, we were grinders too. And it was just like, it almost feels good to be like, yeah, I'm out working that guy. And then you beat them and you're like, yeah, see, I like worked harder than you. I earned it.
Absolutely. I do think it feels good. Plus, I've always had the opinion that it's cocky to think you can be better than someone without also working harder than them. So yeah. I definitely am a big proponent of having that good work ethic. We got some Apple Podcast reviews here. This one comes from Kobe, #1 fan, but he's talking
about
Mark.
That's my burner.
Mark.
That's my burner account. I am my own number one fan, much like...
That's good.
I don't know if you'll think
Hype
that after you
up.
Read
You're
this.
Worth it, Kobe. You're worth being your own
Why
fan.
Why don't you read your own podcast review?
There are two versions here.
No, the top one. Let's read the top one first.
This one above it says, read if Mark is back. Mark, you are so underappreciated. I love all of you. I love your all or nothing bets.
I love all of you. Ooh, Kobe.
I love every part.
He's a taken man.
Keep up the great work. 5-5 for the dive.
All right, we got the second version now. I'm glad Mark is gone and has been replaced by the better, more talented Freak. Keep up the hot takes, Freak. But seriously, I love you guys. At this point, I watched the LCS to keep up with dive instead of watching the dive to keep up with the LCS. You better watch yourself, Mark. You got to keep us in the loop. By the way, you know, Freak's on speed dial. Freak's, he could be here at any moment.
Fans are fickle. They're like, if Mark's back, then don't read that one.
Well, you see, he's playing both sides. So he wants to remain in your good graces.
That does sound like a Kobe move. I believe this
it
is
does,
a burner.
It does, yeah. It's definitely Kobe's burner.
Kobe doesn't want to rub anyone the wrong way. So he's like, who am I next to? That's the person I'm going to hype up right now.
Mark, you're the best.
Sing.
You can trust me.
Thanks, man. I feel it. I can tell. It's the authentic praise.
All right, we got another one here. This one comes from Fiverr. It says, I've been listening to this podcast for years. It's pretty clear to me that these chaps know what they're talking about. The only thing that might spice up a bit is if everyone grew out their hair to Captain Flowers during pandemic lengths.
Yeah, Zale, get on that. What?
I get an exception. Wait for the end. Would rate 7 out of 5 stars. Zale excluded, of course. Much too classy. Thank you. Okay. See? So it's you two have got to get to work.
I grew up pretty long during the pandemic, probably as long as I've ever had it.
Not even close to Captain Flowers length.
No, not Captain Flowers. I cut it once in summer of 2020 when it opened up for a little bit in LA, and you could do that. I ran out and got one. And then
have
I
you ever had
cut.
Long hair, Kobe?
I have unfortunate news for you. I'm about to get a haircut. This is about as long as I've ever had it.
What's,
I've never
in
had
your life.
I've
really?
Never had it longer.
Wow,
you never had like some hippie face, some grunge.
Maybe
face,
when I was like a little kid, because my mom is definitely a hippie. My parents are from Oakland and Berkeley and very progressive. So maybe when I was a little kid and I can't remember.
That's interesting. Yeah,
screw it out.
At
but,
some
yeah.
point in your life, I would have figured you just got lazy. Just didn't.
I feel like everyone goes to that. Like same way.
This is
like,
it. This is lazy. This is quarantine.
Have you ever had a mustache? I feel like that's the other thing as a guy.
I had
like,
a beard for the MSI, the famous MSI with CLG.
I remember that. For I never
I grew
it.
Out a faith beard.
I remember seeing that. And
it worked. That's what we need, actually. Oh, my God. Why have I not done it again ever?
CLG fans, the reason you're at the bottom of the standings is Kobe clean shave.
All right. We got
5 o'clock shadows.
You got to bring it back for Worlds this year, then. We need a dub here, Kobe.
You know what? I'll do it.
All right. There you go. Rainbow Cat 7777. The dive helped me get out of bronze for a week. I'm now bronze again. Thanks, dive. Well, you're much higher rated than most of our peers.
Oh.
No, just kidding.
I hope that's not true.
No, I'm sure they're at least challenger.
Yeah.
Bare minimum. If not, just a bunch of LCS pros.
That's the only people who listen to the pros. Hearing us hype them up.
What's up with your where's the Lux cosplay, by the way, Mark? How's that coming? I've been waiting, haven't heard anything.
I'm going right now. Let's see on Amazon if I can find
one.
Oh
my goodness.
All right, we got the Honda MVP question then. Mark's a slacker. What player from the bottom three teams has the chance to win a championship in the future?
There's some I can get it free shipping on Amazon Prime. Some Lux cosplays.
Good.
They're pajamas, but whatever.
Golden Guardians, FlyQuest,
CLG.
It's funny because we have a lot of previous champions on these teams.
Yep.
We have several LCS champions.
But do you think there's a better shot that a young player gets picked up by a good team? Or do you think that these guys actually have a chance to get picked up by a top team again?
I'll go with my, I don't know if it's a dark horse or not, since I feel like a lot of these answers are inherently dark horses. It's not like, you know, 100%. This guy's doing it. But I like a Blaze Olive. It's crazy. I know for an NA mid laner, just like statistically, that's pretty unlikely.
Poebelter and High did it.
Poebelter and High have done it. But I feel like this split, he's impressed me a lot, given that Golden Guardians are still not a great team.
He was good this weekend.
But he was really good this weekend. Even the LeBlanc game that they lost, he was doing a good job trying to cut behind people, make plays happen. He was distorting in, landing chains on people to chunk out pre-fight. Like all the stuff you want a LeBlanc to do, you can't help it that Yuri Carey walks into Nautilus.
That was the most disappointed I've heard you be with a pro. That was such a disappointment.
He was just like, you can't do that.
You're usually positive with the guys. You're like, a professional player walking into Melee? Like,
well, he was saying it's disrespectful to do it to another professional player.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was saying you can't do that, like walk up to a professional player on Nautilus.
I agree with you. I just thought it was hilarious.
And it's just like, because they did the replay in slow-mo, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, because, you know, sometimes you're looking at a different part of the fight, and you're like, oh, but how did the other carry get caught? And so I'm leaning in, so I'm like, all right.
I may run in.
Let me solve this mystery, okay? How did he get caught? And I'm looking at it in slow-mo, and he's like, oh, he's invising right up next to him. Mystery solved. Yeah. Anyways, just like, holy crap.
Back to hyping a Blaze Olive. I feel like most of Golden Guardians wins are when a Blaze Olive pops off. The Zoe games, the LeBlanc games. I think he had a Viego game that was really good. But in general, it feels like Solo has helped stabilize a lot. He's provided someone else that can sometimes mm-hmm. carry, and he plays team fights quite well as well. Mm-hmm. And that has allowed a Blaze Olive to have the games where when he pops off, they can actually win that game. He's third in CSD at 10 and XPD at 10. So, you know, it's not like some other players who are getting crushed in lane, but then make good plays. Like, I actually mm-hmm. think he's a decent laner. And I feel like Golden Guardians as a team right now obviously has issues. Mm-hmm. But there's a world where it could be Pobelter-esque, Damante-esque, who made Worlds before, where you're not the main focal point, but you're pretty solid. And I could see people investing in him as a mid laner who doesn't take up an import slot.
I have two answers, so you can go first. Even if you take one of them, I still have a backup.
I think I'm thinking Solo. I mean, we saw him in two finals last year with BlackQuest, right? He's I think playing very well for Golden Guardians. And to me, it's even though clearly they're not a great team, they have a lot of issues. He has been such a standout for the team. And, you know, I still think his laning is really good. I think he's a really smart weak side player. You know, I know that there's like some attitude issues there, and he's had problems with that in the past. I think that's part of the reason he didn't get picked up immediately after FlyQuest. But he is a player that if you want to play like a bot lane focused style or even a mid lane focused style and not necessarily play always towards him, he could clearly be on a championship team. I mean, two finals last year.
Say it, glue man.
Glue man. If you need yourself a glue man, Solo's your glue.
My favorite self-labeling of all time, actually, is the self-proclaimed glue man. My backup, and this is risky, trying to pull out a FlyQuest player, because FlyQuest right now feels like the most on fire team.
I don't think they're on fire anymore. I think they're just like...
They're ashes.
Yeah, they're ashes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all burned down. There's nothing left.
Can't even get anything else out of that.
You pour more gasoline on it, maybe. But
yeah, and the team right now, you can see it in some of the... It feels like some of those games where... And people have been in this... Feels like similar situations even in solo queue, where your whole team is just so done with it that even while the game is still going, everybody's checked out.
Waiting for it to end.
You know, yeah, kind of checked out. Man, it feels so sad. But... I kind of wanted to, along the North American mid laners line, try and like pull out maybe Powell Fox, because I do still think, and there was so much hype around him coming from Academy and building up, and I think there still is a lot of potential there. I know it can be really hard for new players when they have bumps right at the beginning of their career, right when they get into LCS, and if it's on a bad team, to kind of stall out. But
yeah,
and any of these cases, you know, drawing from the bottom three teams is going to be difficult, but he's definitely had some good moments as well.
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought for sure, given that you're a jungler, you're going to say Jose Diotto, because mechanically he had a pretty impressive spring split. This mm-hmm. has been a step down. Maybe it's meta or whatnot, or just like the whole team seeming to implode around him, who knows. But he's someone who I think people will obviously take another crack on.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So solo queue, I told you I would mess around with some Hullbreaker stuff and kind of try to figure out like if I even think it's good.
I heard you talking this weekend about it.
Yeah. So I played some games. I built it on some different champions. I tried to figure out like what I thought it would be best on. Basically, the conclusion I've come to is that it's like not actually good early on anything. It feels like it's best as like a third or maybe a fourth item. In most cases, there are maybe some exceptions where it's like better second, but it feels very situational for the most part, right? Part of the issue is that this is an item that rewards you for getting to the tower, and you need to be able to win the 1v1 to get to the tower. And it's worse for winning the 1v1 than a lot of other items, right? So you just don't end up wanting to spend the gold unless you're already dominating or you have a counterpick. So one of the things I found is that it's actually really good on some champions that like auto win their lane, like Quinn, for example. It actually has really high win rates on Quinn. You know, as a third item, it's like almost 63% win rate on Quinn. It's actually quite a good second item as well if you're already slamming. So it's one of those things where the champion just kind of naturally gets you to the tower, and then this helps you extend your lead by taking the tower. But in a lot of matchups, I was really struggling to like find place where I wanted this, right? If you blind pick top, you almost always get counterpicked, and then building Hullbreaker or whatever is like, why do I want this when I'm already losing the 1v1? I'm never going to see the tower, so I think I'd rather just build a Asterix, or I'd rather build for the 1v1 and get a Blade of the Rune King or whatever. So it feels like it's going to be niche, and I think we kind of saw that reflected a bit in the LCS. No one built it. I wouldn't be surprised if we see it very few and far between. Anathema's Chains, on the other hand,
that's the new hotness.
It's really popular.
Yeah, because it is. And all the pros keep talking about too, it's so nice in a lot of these compositions where there is only one threat of a different damage type.
Yeah.
So it allows you to streamline the rest of your build a lot easier too.
Stack armor, put it on the Azir.
And it does feel like when we first talked about patch 11.3, and I was kind of memeing on calling it like Chovy's Chains, just shutting down the best player.
Yeah.
That is a very effective use of it. You know, just putting it on the most carry potential that your opponents have. For me, it's been way more straightforward. I'm just playing as many games on people with Stridebreaker as I can before they nerf it, because they know they overbuffed it. They are going to cut the slow almost in half that they originally gave it, and they are going to take away some of the stats, some of the health that I was so excited about. Mm-hmm. But get the most out of it while you can.
That Nocturne spam, though.
Yeah. The other thing, though, is Ghost Poro. I really like the Omega buffs to Ghost Poro because it lasts so much longer, and the reveal lasts really long too. It used to be that if you're gonna have domination, it was gonna be so much more beneficial to have Zombie Ward and leave behind all these little wards. But the Ghost Poros is mainly for support, because the supports are leaving, you know, the wards that are actually gonna expire. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of sad I don't really get to use it as a jungler. I was gonna try it with Fiddlesticks, but those take a lot longer to expire anyways, and they mostly get scared away. So
yeah,
it's really is a support rune. But I think if you are support and you're going domination, you should, you know, try and make that shift, because it gives you so much extra info.
I was trying to think of what's the most common domination secondary. Are you taking it
Taste
primary?
For Blood and Ravenous is most common to,
yeah,
for that always. I mean, for supports, that would be the question, is like
how do you
people,
actually fit it in?
Like your Taste previous for Blood, probably, previous champions, yeah, that would use Zombie Ward, because you can sprinkle in Zombie Ward.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just some range Taste supports do like Taste for Blood, yeah, plus Zombie Ward, yeah, or Poro or whatever, Ghost Poro as support. But definitely Inspiration secondary is by far the most common for engaged supports, for Hexflash.
So good for lane.
Yeah, yeah. And also for Biscuits can be pretty powerful too. But there are some things like even like Janna and stuff sometimes takes Taste for Blood and whatnot, just for kind of poking back and forth in lane. So pretty cool. And that's one of those runes that I think is hard to appreciate. But yeah, can be really powerful, well, at times, and get you an advantage.
I was gonna say that's especially true for solo queue. Like if you took Zombie Ward over some of these other laning ones, you're probably gonna be like, why'd I do that? But in competitive play,
Scorch where, only.
Yeah, laning power, sort dominance. I think this is something that's actually more of a competitive rune choice in that sense, that you're gonna actually coordinate it well and use vision. Whereas in pro,
vision matters so much in solo queue. Actually,
I'm just saying
too,
people are greedy. They think damage and healing and like laning power, and they're not.
It doesn't
gonna
matter when your Yasuo is playing mid lane with his eyes closed.
That's why I also spam pings. I never use less than 5 pings in a row spamming somebody.
That's how you get muted, dude. That's why no one's listening to you. You spam ping questions.
Wait, I'm the problem?
Yeah.
Me?
It's like you spam ping the ward that you placed for me. Like, didn't you see this idiot? I'm like, all right. Thank you, sir.
All right, 100 Thieves. They're reigning supreme, slapping everybody left and right at the top of the table. How good do you guys feel like they really are? Are they, you know, legitimately one of the best teams we've had in the league for a while? Is everyone else just underperforming?
Both. both because there was some self-sabotage, you know, putting I was going with the stick meme. You're riding your bike and you put the stick into your own wheel.
I thought you were like stabbing yourself. I was like, this is brutal, Kobe.
See, I'm much more wholesome than you guys.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, that was you were kind of
like, I don't know what bike wheel is up there. You got to go down.
Well, yeah. They can't see if I go down there. And they're like, what is he doing under
Now they're going to think you're knifing yourself.
Yeah. Some weird stuff going on.
You're too young, Kobe.
Honestly, though, it is a little bit of both. The biggest thing for me for 100 Thieves is that there are more improvements than just the individual pieces that they changed in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I really think Closer was not playing well in spring. And he's playing so much better now individually as well as with the rest of the team. And it's not just...
MasterCard Player of the Week.
It's not just, the mid laner was holding him back. No, I think he was making individual mistakes previously in last split. And he's playing a lot better. Plus then, Abadaga is playing well. Reaper coming in has really shown up in a lot of the drafts and the flexibility of the team too. So it does feel like it's all of these factors have helped push them.
Someday as well, I think, is another player who you can easily point to is like spam pick. I feel like a lot of the times in their drafts, they just pick the same things and kind of autopiloted. You know, it's like spam pick Renekton, shoving top wave over and over again, do nothing with your priority. You know, like that's how a lot of watching their games felt. They just... Well, I'll do Rift Herald now, I guess. But
previously.
Now, previously in spring, that's how a lot of it felt. But now he's like playing Gwen. He's popping off. They're all having more diverse champion pools. So I think to your point about a lot of people individually have played better. They have what feels like more direction as a team, which probably part of that belongs to Reaper. But everyone's playing a lot better. The question I also have is a lot of people were criticizing their first few games of the week for being like slow and not closing Team Liquid out super cleanly after basically acing them at 10 minutes into the game. And then the FlyQuest one being really slow because they were probably just super scared of Fiddlesticks or whatever. But I feel like that's where the criticism comparing them to like the other top teams that we've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, where like Immortals is just giga slamming when we're talking about like 2016, 2017 Immortals, whatever that was. I do feel like maybe when you start looking at it in that context, some of that criticism can stick. But for this split, the other top teams can't even consistently beat the teams below them. So the fact that they're on an 8-game win streak is pretty impressive. Eight.
I remember clearly because
you made the call.
They went legendary.
I like that. Good call. I think they're really good. I mean, I do think there is valid criticism to, you know, when you get a big lead, you want to be able to close it out. And especially people, I think a lot of the criticisms are like looking, oh, how do you compare to the best teams in the world, right? And if you're trying to compare to LPL or something, then yeah, you have really got to nitpick every part of your game, right? Because just winning does not mean enough. You have got to win in a really clear and really dominant fashion, because people, when you're looking at, you know, LCS compared to LPL, LPL is a stronger league. There are better teams. So, you know, to really compete with those best teams, people are expecting absolute dominance. But I think 100 Thieves have looked great. It's also good to remember that this is just the summer split change. They haven't actually even been together for that long with their new coach, with their new mid laner. I think that they have been improving and developing new styles. And I'm really excited to see how good this team looks come playoff time. You know, are they going to be able to keep it up? Because we have seen teams be a bit of a flash in the pan and then get, you know, kind of caught up to by these other squads. And I know that C9, TSM, TL are all going to be hungry to catch them.
Yeah, it's, you know, in the lock-in tournament when 100 Thieves were kind of riding the hype of, oh, it's going to be the only team with inbuilt synergy with the Golden Guardians pack that they bought and making it,
starter pack.
Yeah, the starter pack and making it so far. I get really excited for top of the LCS now, you know, to have this possibility of a different team up there besides, the good old three.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get a little bit nervous at the top, you know, because can they actually complete it? Is it just going to be a strong regular season and a collapse in playoffs? We were bringing up Old Immortals as the original last team that we're thinking about. Oh,
Lucian Top.
They dominated regular season. This was the only previous team besides the TSM Cloud9 Team Liquid group that had that effect, and yet they fell in playoffs dramatically.
And before anyone talks about 100 Thieves finishing first in spring of 2018, That was on the literal last day they got that. I don't know if anyone remembers this, but like, I'm sure there's some 100 Thieves fans who are like, we got first place in regular season before. It's like, yeah, but our point is that you didn't dominate and hold it the whole time. So yeah. That's your point about like, can they make sure that they stay informed for playoffs? Not did they, are they peaking at the right time?
I think they're on course to do it.
Yeah. Me too. I think they'll definitely be, you know, top three. I think we're going to see them at Worlds for sure. So we'll see. It's been exciting. TSM Cloud9, they've got some catching up to do. You know, we're seeing them look better. I think people started to get really excited about Cloud9 this weekend because the first two games were like, oh, they're back. Perks is crushing back-to-back games. He had the Akali game, and then I believe it was the Yone game. Both looked really, really good. He brought out the Yone again coming into TSM. I mean, I don't know if you were on the AD that day, but everyone predicted C9 win 3 out of 3, and and so it was like the C9 hype was going right, but TSM has been better than them throughout the split, and they did actually, you know, execute on a really good strategy, you know, crushed bot side, and were able to use that to win the game again.
They lost to Dignitas. They could have kept my dream alive of being tied with the Mortal
TSM.
Yeah. They could have been tied for first place, and then they did that.
Mark has had quite the roller coaster relationship with TSM this flip.
Yeah, so when you start talking about predicting C9 to beat them.
And by the way, I beat you in the bet, then Freak came replaced you. I made a bet with him, beat him as well.
Freak's just trying.
Your tag team buddy.
Wiggle his way in here making bets. Yeah. I said that we should make him pay up on next time he casts Immortals C9.
Yeah, the face paint.
Yeah.
It was a good one.
Back onto C9. I think they are looking a lot better, even though they dropped that final game to TSM.
Yeah.
I really like Perks. I mean, I don't know whether it's the hat or whatever right now, but...
Perks and Caps, great combo.
Where'd you steal that from?
I'm sure other people have said it, but I said it
from G2, Mark. From G2. They did it first.
Yeah.
But Blabber as well. On the Diana game when he solo killed whoever was Nocturne top. I forget who they were playing in that game. But like that was the, Blabber's back kind of moment for me when he started solo killing laners. Like, because that's what has earned him the MVPs in the past is the individual playmaking where he just finds ways to snowball his leads.
I thought it was interesting listening to Fudge and his interview afterwards and talking about it and the things that they're working on. So I like that they have so much direction in trying to attack these problems and trying to improve.
Yeah. So Fudge specifically, if you guys haven't heard the interview, you know, he was talking about how they felt part of the reason that Bobber was doing poorly or not as well as in the past was he was skipping camps to try to serve the solo laners basically and try to serve his laners and be there at different timings. And they felt that they needed to play more around him to facilitate him getting more farm so he's stronger. And I think that makes some sense. I do think that, you know, Cloud9 is very supportive of their teammates and they're not going to come out and be like, yeah, Blabber's been shit this split, you know, but also I don't think it's just that to be fair. I think that Blabber has made more individual mistakes than he has in the past, right? He's just not playing as well this split as he did in spring, as he did last year as well. So I do think there's an element of that, but it's cool that they have a very targeted plan. Like you said, you know, get Blabber more farm, enable him, because to your point, that puts him in a position to solo kill a top laner, right? To get these monstrous leads and run over games. And that is where he's most successful. When you think of his best games, these Olaf games where he gets ahead of the curve of the game, he's up on levels and he can take any fight he sees and just kind of extend that advantage and snowball the game.
Since we're talking about both TSM and Cloud9 though, I want to put this conversation right next to that final game between the two and Spica.
Ooh.
Because there are... This game was really interesting. So after the fact, people were criticizing TSM for not finishing quicker.
Yeah.
Because of the amazing snowball they had. And I think that is always going to come towards the top teams. Like we were just discussing for 100 Thieves, the main criticisms were not snowballing more effectively, not finishing cleaner, not, you know, being able to push forward. So I think that is not unexpected. But I just really think that they, especially Spica in the bottom lane, deserve so much credit for doing what they did with what was given to them.
Yeah.
Yes, it was ideal, fortunate situation that Thresh comes right up to the brush. But, you know, the preparation to just wait there, waiting for their late invade. They had the plan to go for the late invade anyway. it's a bit better because they do get this first kill, and then you can easily transition your invade into zoning bottom lane off of multiple waves and just dominating so hard off of bottom side of the map. But the beginning of that plan was going to go for an invade anyway and for trying to focus on bottom side anyway. It's just that it exploded even better than you would initially hope for.
I have so many strong thoughts about that game.
Yeah.
Because I really do feel like C9, in a lot of ways, should have had the better draft. They have, and when I talked to Loss, he was on the AD, mm-hmm. you know, when he was saying, oh, the game was hard to close out, people were already criticizing it. So I brought it up and I was like, how much of that do you think was like, you guys didn't take opportunities that you should have, or like you misplayed, versus like you're playing into Trundle, Azir, Thresh, Aphelios.
Really good wave clear.
If you flub your engage at all, you're just going to get smoked. And like, it just puts the same pressure on. He's like, I think it was their comp. Like, it's pretty nutty. And I think this is where I would give a little criticism to the TSM draft. I don't know what Victor does for your win condition of you have to snowball the game, which they did. And that's why they won, because they crushed bot lane so hard. Mm. But you're looking.
This is interesting.
Yeah. So we can go back and forth a little bit on this if you disagree. But like, you have Volibear, Viego, Kalista, Aphelios, or excuse me, Nautilus. Most teams are going to take a melee dive assassin in the mid lane to help your win condition of murdering them. You would see a Yone, for example, by a lot of other teams in the current meta or something to counter the Azir. The fact that they go Victor just kind of throws his damage over the top, and I think makes it a little bit harder to execute these kinds of dives. And I think this is one of the reasons that I'm still a little concerned about TSM in the current meta. Mm-hmm. Is I don't know if they can necessarily do the same things that I want to see them do. And I think that's why that game felt difficult to close out for them, is because, you know, like, you're not murdering them with this insane dive comp because you got snowballed ahead. I just don't think the Victor helps as much there. And it's more just a stable laning pick that PoE's comfortable on.
Yeah. So like when we were casting this game, you know, like in the draft, I expected him to pick a control mage because the AP options were limited. And mm-hmm. I don't think they wanted to go full physical.
Yeah.
So I do think they wanted some sort of magic damage, because otherwise it's like Trundle who's going to, you know, ult someone and just stack pure armor.
You don't really want to play Echo there, probably.
And to your point, he's just not that comfortable on melee champions, right? Yeah. His most played melee champion, other than Kassadin, which I just feel is kind of an exception, it's a little bit different style, is Talon, and it's three games, right? So he's almost played his, that's career, right? That's over all these years. He's had two Viego games now, so he's catching up. But I think you know, you could have gone to something like an Orianna, maybe. I think that C9 took the Azir as both as something for them, but also as a denial.
For sure.
Because I do think that would maybe help with the dive a little bit. Something that you can follow up a bit more easily. Maybe Orianna or something would have fit better there. But I do agree that's something that can be a criticism of TSM, because while they have played some of these early snowball-y comps, you still just can't convince me that PoE, like, that's what he wants to play, right? It just does not seem to be his comfort playing melee champions and playing, you know, a lot of these dives. He did have a really good Viego game, I think it was this weekend earlier, mm-hmm. but it's still a work in progress for them.
Yeah.
And maybe they just need to find other AP picks or other picks within his wheelhouse that can suit that style, that gameplay.
So Nocturne is banned. They already have Viego on their team. Lee Sin is banned.
Akali banned.
Gwen is already picked. I actually liked that they did give themselves some scaling, some late game insurance, and not fully committing to having no outs later on, because mm-hmm. the Victor actually ends up being very pivotal
in 5v5.
Yeah.
In controlling the later game neutral objectives. And a lot of these other tools that you would ideally want to really just be able to blast through and, you know, like tower diving and finish the game out quicker have been taken away in this scenario. So it was actually a really interesting one to me. As far as the options that they actually had left up.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the full physical thing into Trundle sounds horrifying, but at the same time, you're not trying to kill the Trundle in that mm-hmm. game plan execution. You're killing the Aphelios ideally, or the Azir, and how much armor are they really going to stack versus how much, you know, pen and damage can you just get when you're snowballing? So like, it does radically change how you're going to play this game out, and it's a bit of a theoretical thing, but it also speaks to the fact that C9 just, you could argue, outdrafted them. The fact that they've forced with the AP bans and stuff like that.
I did feel they outdrafted them.
Yeah, I think everyone I talked to sounded
I thought C9's draft was way better. I thought that Spica absolutely changed the game because I thought Spica played great and snowballed bot lane, and that's why they won.
I'm probably going against the grain then, because I really feel like on this patch, with the extra money added into secondary turrets, they just put 750 more gold onto the map. So early game is more important than it was previously, and being able to draft for early game
dominance. They just didn't have good tools to end the game is what
I
felt.
I would also argue that Thresh Aphelios is one of the better lanes in the current meta. You just don't expect your... I mean, this is why TSM deserves credit in game, but like Vulcan has no reason to face check there. That's just a total brain fart. Mm-hmm. And then that was like the whole cause of the map split snowball, the fact that you can't stabilize so much later and stuff. And so I would say normally that lane should not go that bad into a Kalista.
I think they get zoned off the turret whether he dies or not there, because he didn't spend summoners or anything, and I don't think you can defend the level one.
So
I still think they get zoned off, but I do agree. First blood went to Kalista. They're like, your Kalista's like 4,000 gold ahead of the Aphelios, and it's still hard to end. And maybe that's like part column A, where if PoE could play Sylas or some sort of more divey thing and help them close the game, maybe it looks different. But I also do think that, at least specifically, like I agree with you, Kobe, early game's important. But in this specific comp, I felt like Cloud9 had a lot of good ways to delay the game and way better scaling.
I just think that sort of game plan has failed over and over, the weight and scales, and it did yet again. Either way, in the level one, you're getting the split map regardless, because they're going for the invade.
For sure.
They're going to push
them
off.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's only handed to them by the Thresh.
Yeah, I agree with that completely.
Dying away. And this is always a tug of war, a push and pull. How much do you invest in early game power, in pushing lanes to have priority to gain these early leads over objectives, and how much can you get out of it versus the wall that you're going up against? There's no doubt that Azir and Aphelios throughout the long history of this champion, 300 years, in fact, it has always been an insanely great duo of late game carries. So I like that it's tested over and over, and I feel like right now this is actually a good way to try and attack it, because one of the things to Azir specifically was that the early damage was reduced, and so you should be able to have more authority there than previously, and it's about how you're going to be able to use that to enable your jungler. I think Spica applied the pressure in the correct area.
I think that they did a great job snowballing that game. I just rewatched when he died, and he wasn't in lane to contest for level one, and then like when they tried to walk up to the wave, they got hooked. So even though he didn't blow any summoners, like Thresh Aphelios not being able to contest the wave at all and get chunked before they even hit a minion is like, it's pretty doomed. I feel like if they actually, you can either pull the wave, you can do a couple things, or I'm like, that death really hurt.
I think this is really interesting discussion. I still, even though I'm arguing this side, do agree that they could have pressed harder and they could have gotten more out of it and ended the game quicker.
I think this is one of the most fun I've had discussing the game in a while in depth, because this is like really the granular stuff where you're like, okay, you're a top level team, C9, like how do you win this game? Or for TSM, like, you know, could you have closed faster?
It's
is it draft optimization?
And usually Cloud9 is the team on the other side that is trying to
be the ones that close.
The ones that are scaling.
Yep.
And usually it's Team Liquid that are they're trying to do it against, and they're usually successful.
It's really cool. It's definitely fun to look at those, because there are so many different things that you can think about, right? Could they have closed faster? Definitely. Could they have tried to dive and close the game? Got ace and lost the game.
Yeah,
definitely. And that's, I think, why they waited for Elders and waited for Barons, because they knew they would win fights at neutrals for sure.
And I know we're talking a long time about this, but I also think C9 did a good job trading. They actually ignored third Drake, fourth Drake. I think they ignored a Baron too, and just kept taking turrets to keep the gold lead relatively close. Mm-hmm. And they got the two turrets on the top side with the Rift Herald push that one time. So like, I don't fault.
I enjoyed the game a lot.
I thought it was a really fun game, and like, super, like a lot of things to talk about on a high level. So
we were talking afterwards too, that we were very glad we got the fights at the end where Cloud9 was actually competitive in some of these team fights, being down almost 10,000 gold, because otherwise you don't get that other side of the argument showing up and the story of like, oh, the scaling, I swear to you guys, it's there, you know, like the power is there, it's lying in wait. And it was really cool to see. But another team going 3-0. Another team climbing the ranks. Yes, it was a very simple schedule, a very easy schedule for them. But Evil Geniuses standing out here in the LCS with a 3-0. which Sven Skeren tweeted was their first.
He did. He did tweet that. Apparently, so according to our producer, it's the first since Lockin, he thinks, is what one of their coaches said.
I think that's good. I don't count Lockin.
Yeah, because exactly. And 3-0 weekend, it has been three game weekends this year.
Yeah.
So it would be basically their first in a long time.
Yeah, because before it would have been 2-0.
The thing that stood out to me most about it, actually, were... Yeah, Svenskeren's playing playing a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, they're exciting Jizuke plays as always. But I really liked some of these Danny outplays. And who was the AD carry?
Johnson got...
It was Johnson.
Got his...
ankles broken.
Ankles broken. Absolutely.
He's the poster, you know? When yeah. you, when
Man.
You, in the NBA, when you dunk on someone, the other guy's the poster.
Yeah.
He's the...
This Johnson one was even worse, though. Like, I don't even know that, that Johnson necessarily did anything wrong, per se, but it was like, you're crying on the poster, the rim is shattered.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
it's even more funny because Johnson is the one walking up to him to try and kill him.
Yeah.
And he just gets completely sidestepped. So it's even more than just like, oh, someone's coming and dunking on you. It's more like an and one video, if you ever watch those, like actually breaking their ankles and they're trying to guard and just ends up on the floor the other way. So that was really cool to see. I like that Danny was on the desk in the interview afterwards and he's talking about, oh, yeah, and some of my friends clipped it and started sending it to me and were hyping me up. And I thought, you know, those are the moments that really make you love the game.
And excited for the future of EG, because this is really, really cool. This is a super young player. He's like 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, to see a player come in and have the mechanics and have that kind of future that they can build towards, I think is really exciting. Artemis was selling me on this guy before he even came in. When I heard that they were moving him in, he would say, no, he's actually an upgrade today. And wait and see how good he'll be in a couple of years, basically, right? That we think he's going to be a star. And a lot of times you hear that kind of stuff and you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're kind of seeing the inklings of that. We've seen some really good mechanical plays. I think his team fighting largely has been really good. He has made mistakes, to be certain, and there are areas that he can really work on. But I am very excited for the future of this
guy. And I've heard, and these are always hard to go off of because, you know, comms, people talking about comms stuff we don't actually have, you know, insight into, but I have heard that communication is one of the things they're working on and building
for sure.
And one of the things that they do need a bit of time with, but yeah, it's definitely exciting for the team. And that's what you associate most with EG is exciting. Okay.
Yeah. I think, we had him on the desk and he was talking about some of those mistakes. He was like, I was trying to play aggressive and like extend his lead. Cause I think he knows that's like what you're supposed to do.
I did feel, you know, after that play, after the Johnson one, I felt like he was going for more of those, you know, because on the final day in the last game, there were a couple of Tristana ones where he was like, oh, you know, going for the big jump into like some low health members, try and use the ultimate and rocking them out. And they were getting away with like slivers of health. But I was like, okay, so it was good positive feedback on the big first outplay.
He talked about the dopamine hit.
Yeah, now he's really, really looking for those.
Yeah, and then that game was troll because Jizuke, after they were like starting to snowball the game, killed himself like three times in a row.
So, yeah.
And then he was talking about like there's two voices. It's like him and Jizuke and Impact being like, we flank, we dive. And him being like, I'm Tristana, I can kite back. And eventually after a couple of those fights, they're like, let's go with the kite back approach.
But they've been really a lot of fun to watch. I'm honestly such a big Jizuke fan. I love watching Jizuke.
Yeah, me too.
And he does deserve credit. You know, when he was on the desk, he was talking about he feels like people highlight his bad plays much more than his good plays.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I think that, you know, we try to even it out. And I like to always talk about, man, this guy does a lot of really good stuff. Because even statistically, it's like he has the biggest goal advantages of any mid laner in the league at 10. He's second best in CSD. He's the highest forward percentage. He's playing in their face, aggressive. He does have bad games and bad moments, but he has a lot of incredible ones. And overall, it is very largely good, I think, from Jizuke. But he goes for risky plays, and sometimes you're going to fail spectacularly.
People enjoy looking up to highlight plays and really good, exceptional plays.
Yep.
But damn, people love making fun of bad blunders plays. And bloopers. You know, America's Funniest Home Video style things where you're just going for something crazy.
I could be in the LCS.
Yeah, and then you just see it flop so exceptionally.
I can kick a Brahmin to my team.
So one of them, with it further slowed down, like, yeah, Kaisa goes invisible, so he can't kick that one. And then he's like, yeah, but Kaisa's got E up. You know when you're going in for that.
Yeah.
So definitely a hard one to pull off. I love it. You know, wouldn't have it any other way.
Nope.
Dignitas, what about the situation here? Because they have had some of the most scrutinized changes to the roster, and they're starting to bounce back. You know, Acadian, it feels like he is finding his groove.
Yeah.
The main thing for me with the theme of Dig and now the new Dig basically is that Acadian is very willing to skip camps to go for these early ganks, and in a lot of cases they have been working out, but I do foresee them then running into the problem, especially when teams are expecting it.
Yeah.
To something that like Cloud9 have run into with Blabber, and they've cited specifically a very similar thing of skipping camps in order to get laners ahead, because especially early on, it can have this build on snowball effect for junglers. If you are skipping camps, you get behind in experience, then you can't catch up. And the enemy jungler is just progressively clearing faster and outmaneuvering you on the map. So I'm very excited for the kind of resurgence, but I'm also a little trepidatious.
It's a little bit like the CLG conundrum, right? Where they come out with this big style, you know, hard engage, win a bunch of games, because I do think teams can prepare and adjust like you're talking about, right? If you play against a team that has naturally winning lanes against you, they just have more skilled laners. They know that you're going to be going for this early ganking strategy. They will ward early. They'll track the kind of paths that you like to do. And if you don't mix it up a lot, they'll just play defensively when you're on that side of the map. And as you say, their jungler is going to clear faster, is going to get earlier buys, which is going to, you know, just slingshot them even more past you, because then they have better items. They're clearing even faster. And you don't have to, you know, really do anything to beat a team like that sometimes, because it just becomes this big jungle advantage. And that's what I think that they're going to have to be playing around. You have to show multiple styles. You've got to be able to do the full clear yourself, and you've got to be a complete team, or teams will prep and adjust to you.
I completely agree with him coming out of the gates with this strategy, though, because it feels like they need to have one of, you know, an early gank, some stuff, something to upset the natural course of the game with the way that it had been going since the switches. So that's why there's two sides to this, where like you need to have, you know, you set the game up in a different manner to have some influence in some of this kind of wild card effect, basically. But then you also are kind of limited in the long-term success.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's also why in spring, Dignitas was good, because they were, in a lot of ways, the wild card team, where they're picking weird jungle picks that other people aren't playing. Their level ones were usually like, do everything you can to help Dardock, and then like the game states would get kind of wonkier, and their laners are not naturally that strong. I mean, Yasui is maybe a little bit better than Sligo, but like that's always what they did. So I appreciate Acadian kind of keeping some of that aggressiveness in the game. Neo and Afro are still relatively solid. So I feel like they've stabilized, you know, like they were plummeting for a little bit right when all these changes were happening and stuff. And I think they're starting to find a way back forward. I don't think they'll ever be, well, they were like top half of the league from spring. I don't know if they'll get back in the top half of the league, because it feels like Immortals took their spot. But I think that they can at least stabilize. It feels like they're stabilizing.
Yeah, try and stay above the bottom rocks, which, by the way, right now, I guess we should get right to it.
Rest in peace, FlyQuest.
Rest in peace, FlyQuest. Resting at the bottom of the ocean right now. Feels like they're dropping quick.
They're sunk. They're not dropping anymore. They're as far as you can
go. Can you keep dropping? I think they can keep dropping.
I guess they can, because they add relegation back.
They're going for longest loss streak, I feel like.
I mean, they're not 10th yet either, so they can drop more.
That's what I'm saying.
It's just sad. I mean, obviously, you can always go down, but they look to me the clear worst team in the league, right? And that feels bad to say, because obviously CLG and Golden Guardians are down there with them, but they are tough to watch at times. Lately.
Avert your eyes.
It's 10 straight losses. It doesn't feel like they really have anything that you can cling on to. With Golden Guardians, at least I feel like their early games have gotten a lot better. And you're like, well, maybe you're going to throw the game if you're going to mid-game with a lead. But at least you were going to get a lead sometimes. FlyQuest just feels like they lose at every stage. It doesn't feel like there's really much to cling on to anymore of like, ooh, but this. Because, you know, for a long time, everyone had been talking about Jose Diotto and Licorice. And I think that they have some good moments. But there's just too many mistakes now. And the good moments feel too far and few between, you know. And it's just tough to watch this team because it feels like it's just been a total collapse. And in spring, like they were not the best, but they were a decent team. And it's just gone completely off the rails. It feels really sad.
I'm super sad watching them. You talk about Golden Guardians. Golden Guardians has a better record in summer than both CLG and FlyQuest. So like when I watch their games, I'm like, okay, a bunch of young guys or a couple of young guys trying to improve. You can see that they're trying. They get some leads. Even that game where they lost with the LeBlanc game.
That was like, a big throw too.
Yeah, I was like, at least, you know, Golden Guardians is trying. And CLG, they're on a 6-game loss streak, but you saw that spark, and so you're always wondering if they can catch fire again. But with FlyQuest, it's just nothing to.
Oh my God.
There's no footholds.
It's just sad, man.
You're just sliding down the rock face, and you're like.
I like the point about records in summer too. I feel like those should actually be highlighted bigger than this new world we're living in, where we combine everything for.
You think that the summer records should be like be on the left?
I feel like summer records should be the main thing, and then
overall,
it should be much smaller the overall, because we do have to keep that in mind as far as the new playoffs and worlds qualification system and stuff. But it just feels like since things change so much over the course of two splits, to keep a bead on actually how the teams are doing right now, especially. Well exemplified by FlyQuest is the most recent games.
I mean, like if you change the rankings to be by summer only, FlyQuest is 3-12, CLG is 4-11, Golden Guardians is 5-10, and Dignitas is 6-9. It's actually like relatively competitive at those four spots.
Yeah, it's just that FlyQuest. all of FlyQuest's success was at the start, so it's been pretty depressing since then. 10 game loss streak, obviously. Yeah. So you said 3-12, right?
3-12
So they started 3-2, and now they're 0-10, right? So that's the tough part, is that it's been so long since we've seen something from them, and I agree. I mean, the summer record feels much more indicative of current form for these teams. So from that point of view, it's really relevant. But it's also like, then I check myself and I realize we're going into week 6. Right. So the playoff race actually matters. And that's where the year long record really does matter, because teams are going to be fighting based on those records, to get these playoff positions, to try to get into the upper bracket, to try to, even get into playoffs at all, especially if you're one of these bottom teams who are still pretty close in the standings. Right. It's only two teams that are straight up just eliminated right off out the gate. And then you want to really make sure you're top 6, because 7-8 start in the lower brackets. They don't get that second chance. That's also a big disadvantage. But I mean, the big focus for these teams obviously right now is just trying to find some way to improve your form, because even if you sneak in somehow as, a FlyQuest or a Golden Guardians or a CLG, it's likely just a quick 0-3 and then you're out in the lower bracket.
I remember when I had my first full match history of 10 losses. Ooh. For a long time,
because the old whole client screen was red.
The old client, it would go to 10 maximum.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I was like, I've never had just full red every single game. And then it happened to me, and it's just so depressing.
Get me some green on the
that
screen.
Omega large loss streak. Hopefully, they can pull out of it. FlyQuest got to believe in. Ocean Drake's something, you got to hold on to something, Azale.
Believe in your academy team.
I would be okay with that at this point. It comes down to, are you looking to build around any of these pieces for next year? If they want to keep some players, then and they know they're not going to keep other players, then at this point, I say you should just be building towards the future, bring up academy players, try to figure things out for next year, because I think there's no shot this team goes to Worlds at all. And if you're not going to get to Worlds, if you're not going to contend for the championship, start just looking towards the future.
I mean, that's how I feel completely, because for FlyQuest Academy, I cast a couple of their games recently. they're good. They're aggressive. Like, they're still young, obviously, and fresh. And when they brought the three players in last week, they actually brought some of that with them, where they made a lot of plays, should have been able to snowball that game, but they're not coordinated. They have the mid and jungle from the main team and, like, some of this other stuff. You know, I think NXI and Triple also look decent in Academy. So, like, if you ever do a full team swap, you can start evaluating, to your point, because what's a 0-3 in playoffs going to teach you if they manage to make it right now, if they stop the slide even? Mm-hmm. But, you know, who are you building around next split is the question.
Absolutely.
All right, Twitter questions. We've got one from Willie over here at Marcazell and Kobe. What champion has been played in an off role that you would like to see return? For me, jungle Ezreal, support Nunu, or support Trundle.
It's funny hearing you say for me while reading a question, because I was like, those are your picks.
And for,
like,
Willie, yeah. I should just insert.
I was like, really?
I think the Lee Sin bot was cool. I like some of the Senna pairings. Some of the Senna pairings, when I saw them around the world, like the Heimerdinger Senna, I got really excited. I was like, this is cool. I like seeing some of these kind of unique strategies. I don't know if you even want to call this like off role for Heimer, because Heimer's just like not played in pro.
He's just wherever
so, like,
he fits
is his
in,
role. Yeah. But that kind of stuff I think is really cool. Like the Cho'Gath Senna, the Heimer Senna, the Lee Sin Senna. When I think of things that could potentially come out in pro that I've seen, you know, over this last year, I really enjoyed those. And I'm somewhat hoping we get to see that.
I'm going to go deep cut all the way back to Shyvana top season 1.5. I guess it was between season 1 and 2, or was it in season 2 with Moscow 5?
It was popular even much
You're
later.
You're going to Darien?
Yeah.
Like season 4, season 5, it was like Renekton and Shyvana.
Renekton and Shyvana Mundo were like the yeah. Holy Trinity. Yeah. I guess I'm thinking specifically the Riggles Lantern BS, where you had like three Riggles Lanterns.
Yuck. And the top laners are just in my jungle all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, didn't you love it?
Yuck.
Kobe's opinion.
I'm
of
disgusted.
As soon as
he said season 2 Moscow 5, I was like,
"All right, I'll give you the season
He's
4
on the
Shyvana
shit list now.
Will you take me on the season 4 Shyvana? Because at least she didn't build Riggles then. She was just like Bork first, like annoying.
Was that Bork, or was that just like when everyone built Sunfire?
Maybe it was Sunfire.
It was
first.
Just like three Sunfire, Spirit Visage, Iceborne champions. Or was I can't remember?
No, it wasn't Iceborne, because it was all mana list. All three were mana list. Renekton, Shyvana, and
yeah, you're right. The Iceborne meta came later.
Yeah, I think maybe you're right. It was Sunfire. I don't know why I remember Bork.
I think it was Sunfire. I think that was the you built Sunfire on every champion, and you play those three top, and that's the game.
Yeah, that's why I didn't like that meta, though, because
it's a terrible answer, Mark.
This answer sucks.
That's why I tried to say season 2, but you're like, not season 2 because I'm a jungler. I don't like the season 4 top meta. That's why I said the season 2 one.
Both parts of it, I give.
I'm with Kobe on this one. The season 4 one will give one thumbs down. The season 2 one will give two thumbs
down. Double thumbs down. Why do you not like it? You're a top lane. You should love just pressing W, clearing the wave, running into the jungle, dropping wards.
Not fun to watch.
I wasn't talking about watching. I was talking about playing. I love playing that. It was the most brain off, free win stuff ever.
From that point,
Mark's running around. I'm a dragon.
Exactly. I'm just ulting in. I'm throwing stuff, throwing fireballs.
From the point of view of I want to play it, I could see it. That's like
you get a free ward on Riggles. You like, just like
Cinderhulk top. That was when top laners were chilling. I'm sure Kobe loved that too. Where I, you know,
remember Revolver Vladimir? Not Revolver. Spirit of the Spectral Wraith Vladimir.
I'm pushing
top.
My top lane, yeah. Then I'm at your Krugs and I'm smiting them because
all
I got
my favorite top
Kobe.
Metas are brain off, mess with the jungler metas.
My answer
up, on the same page
is Rakan mid.
Oh, that was cool.
Ooh.
You had Perk's very famous YouTube video one shot in caps with it, but also. And I was kind of sad. It actually never caught on as much in NA as it did in EU, where they actually had, you know, Assassin Rakan, one trick player guy, and a lot in LCK and LPL. At least in the regions, it didn't actually make it to major region competitive play. It is much more about setting up and roaming with your jungler, and all of a sudden you got this super quick playmaking champion that's coming with you to set you up for kills, knockups and stuff. Rakan mid actually had a lot of burst damage.
Bring back funnel so Kobe can be
a
really,
no, he's such a
I don't
jungler.
Go
he's
in like, the funnel. I don't
I love
go.
When my mid laner plays things that set me up for kills. And I hate when top laners play things that got in my jungle.
It wasn't just about setting up jungle, okay? Rakan mid bursted people. Rakan mid one-shot people.
You can one-shot people with it.
We do actually have an anchor question added here. Logan Bernard has one for us.
Hey, guys. It seems like every season in the LCS, middle-of-the-pack teams will play a very slow, quote-unquote, macro approach, but the macro is mediocre, and the teams seem tentative to make plays. What will it take for LCS teams to play a more aggressive style?
I mean, to me, the answer has always been the same, that the teams at the top dictate, and they'll play whatever they think is going to win them the most games, right? So if your top teams are dominating with an aggressive style, that's when other people try to emulate that, right? I think the slow style for so many years can kind of be distilled to, like, guess how SKT plays? Everyone's trying to be them, right? And we have seen much more of a shift with that, with, you know, like G2 and IG and some of these super aggressive teams, FPX, etc., who have kind of changed things a bit. Right now, I feel like it's a bit more of a split, because you have, like, the most macro-focused team in the LPL was RNG. They just won MSI. Dom1 kind of plays slow. But there's also teams on the other side of the coin that like to play aggressive. And even in the LCS, we have some of that. We have, like C9 is largely very aggressive. TSM is even trying to play, like, some of the 4 melee dive stuff. We're getting more of it.
Yeah, I think it's actually not super complicated game design to push the game more towards benefiting early action. And all you have to do is put more value out on the map. So initially done by, oh, now we have Scuttle Crabs and Rift Herald and Dragons instead of that. You know, the game started out where Dragon was actually worth thousands of gold early on, and you could rush to Dragons straight at the beginning of the of the game. But, you know, over the course, then it went through the slower periods. Now we're just adding more and more back. And so now with turret plates and then the most recent patch, adding the extra 250 gold to secondary turrets, there's more and more value added onto the map that encourages more proactive action. So you can actually take those rewards. And if the team is trying to stall, trying to play slower, then they have to deal with a more powerful enemy because you have more gold, you have more resources.
Yeah, I think I understand the perspective of the caller or the question, if it's like looking maybe a little bit more internationally, because I feel like domestically we have teams who are trying to play aggressive. Even, you know, 100 Thieves, this is not a great weekend to say it, but they have generally been pretty aggressive. Like, their Karma's in.
I like how he says trying.
Yeah, I mean, it's not always successful, but, like, they are playing more aggressive. You know, with C9 example, yep. TSM, like you're saying, okay, they played a couple of 4 melee comps this weekend. They're playing Kalista and trying to snowball bot. Like, I feel like teams are trying to do it. Yeah. I think the thing that people usually get fed up with is actually when you go more international and the teams struggle to generate the same leads, and it feels like they fall back into passive play styles, where oftentimes it's also just like you're struggling to make moves against better teams. So I feel like part of it might be more that like preconceived notion of what NA is versus like what is actually happening this split.
I mean, our last champion, Cloud9, won in spring. They were playing Yone and stuff, right? They're playing aggressive picks. It wasn't control mages. It wasn't about 5v5. It was largely about snowballing games. Blappers won 2 MVPs by doing what? Snowballing games, playing aggressive, right? So I do think that we are getting that in NA. And people have to remember, like, how much even the league has shifted towards aggression from just, like, 4 years ago, where you look at, you know, when TSM was making every single finals, when TL, you know, won all their championships as well, that was very much so the scale for late, bot lane focus, 5v5, all the double lift style championships generally were that. And I think that it has been a bit of a shift. So I'm happy to see it. Hope we get to see more of it. But that will wrap it up for us for now. Thank you, Honda, for making this episode possible. And remember, if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of The Dive, youtube.com/LCS. You can also check us out. Was that you pressing the subscribe button? Yeah.
Click.
Thank you. Good job.
There's no feedback. I really missed the
Buzz.
Click noise. Yeah.
Okay. We'll work on that. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. Send us your questions on Twitter using the hashtag DiveLOL. Takes on Anchor.fm are also accepted. If you got a funny review for us, you might hear that on the show. And finally, the LCS returns this Friday at 3 p.m. to continue our rivalry theme with TSM versus CLG. And we have a battle of two top teams, TSM and 100 Thieves, this Sunday. Going to be a good one. See you then.